I've got 5:30. We're going to go ahead and start our open our meeting. City Clerk, would you please? I'm sorry. Hold on one second. Call the meeting to order. And at this time, everyone, please stand. We'll do an invocation. City Manager, would you give us the honors tonight?
Certainly. Would you please bow with me? Father in heaven above, we come before you as ever grateful for the blessings of this another day. Lord, as we gather this evening to conduct the business of the city, we ask that you bless our deliberations, our discussions, and all that is done here. That above all, it serve our community, that it makes lives better, and above all, Lord, that it is pleasing and acceptable in your sight. It's in your Son's humble name, and we offer this prayer humbly, as together all who agree said, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. At this point, Ms. City Clerk, would you please call the roll of the council?
Yes. The Honorable Mayor Pro Tem Hattie Portis Jones.
Present.
The Honorable Linda J. Davis.
Present.
The Honorable Alex Heath.
Present.
The Honorable Ulysses J. Smallwood.
Absent.
The Honorable Pat Pallon.
Present.
The Honorable James Whitmore.
Present.
Mr. Mayor, you have a quorum.
Okay. At this time, you have before you, can I get a motion to adopt the City Council agenda tonight?
So moved.
Second.
A motion is made by Mr. Whitmore and second by Ms. Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. We'll go to our first item.
First item is an agreement with Charles Abbott Associates for Building Development Services.
Mr. Mayor, we have representatives from Charles Abbott and Associates here to provide a brief presentation on this agenda item, and I will give way to those gentlemen at this time.
Go ahead, sir. I'll let you go through your presentation.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Mayor, Honorable Council, City Staff, thank you for this opportunity to speak this evening. First off, I want to apologize for the absence of Mr. Tim Inglis. He's our operations manager. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it tonight due to illness. So I'll be filling in with the presentation for him.
Okay.
Can I get your name, please?
Charles Abbott is a national company. We've been in business since 1984. We have over 25 community partners here in Georgia. Here in Georgia, we have 14 building officials, 30 code inspectors, two engineers, and we also have some other support staff as well. Here you'll see a list of community partners that we have: City of Chamblee, LaGrange, Thomaston, nearby city of South Fulton, Palmetto, and we even go down to city of Albany in southern Georgia, as well as Emerson and Bartow and Adairsville in that area as well. CAA currently employs 50 here in the state of Georgia. The equipment that we have is owned and maintained by CAA, so the city doesn't have to worry about maintenance and update on purchasing inspection equipment, computers, tablets, vehicles, and so forth. And we're also responsible for providing the training required for our staff and developing our staff through additional certifications. Through technology, we employ electronic scheduling and plan review to help expedite the service, and also we respond the next day to all inspections called in. We have quick response times and turnarounds. Our inspectors are on the job sites early, try to accommodate the customers, that way they're not waiting around for inspections, and because we know there are other appointments that have to be made throughout the day for emergency instances. And with the contract provided, the revenue sharing ensures that the city, cost of the city will never exceed what the permit fees taken in are. CAA is also requesting that the city adopt a proposed fee schedule. It's one that meets industry standard and is inflation-proof. That fee schedule is based on the ICC building valuation data table, which is produced annually. Once this is adopted, the city won't need to revisit updating the fee schedule in the future. So the ICC evaluates every year construction costs nationally. They produce it in their table. So if they do go up, they go up incrementally, so your fees will automatically adjust. I have seen some years where they stayed static. They didn't go up because construction costs overall haven't, but we know in the past 3 years, construction costs has went up quite a bit, so they've adjusted. This is a copy of the proposed fee schedule. A little hard to read. It is a simplified. We do have the formula for calculating new construction, and as I said, it's based on the ICC building valuation table. But it also gives the option for basing fees on contractual price. So if there is a signed contract in place, we will honor that as the estimated construction cost over the building valuation table. There are some flat rates in this fee schedule, as well as some other fees I don't believe the city currently had in place, such as plan review fee for residential, and then some other fees for re-roof sidings and that. So this fee schedule overall is user-friendly, not only for the city staff, but for the public. So here's current comparisons. And this is based on the current fee schedule that the city has. If you take in consideration a residential project, a 2,000-square-foot house, currently the city's rate for permit fee is 25 cents per square foot. So that comes to a total of $500, and then there are no plan review fees in the city schedule for residential. There's a commercial $1 million project listed. So the current fee is $37.35 with a $16.81 plan review fee. By adopting the proposed fee schedule, those will change a little bit. So that same single-family house, the permit fee is going to go to $15.50 with a $150 plan review fee. The million-dollar commercial project is going to go to $58.50 with a $29.25 plan review fee. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions, as well as Mr. Hart.
Mr. Mayor, if I may add some additional context, we sought services through Charles Abbott because upon assessing our operational needs across multiple departments, what became apparent to us is that we were under-resourced in a number of areas. This is one of the best examples of that. As you probably are aware, Council has already approved a number of pending residential construction developments that total well over 1,000 new homes that are coming in the near future. And prior to this effort that we're presenting to you tonight, we had a single person inspecting all of those homes. We've simply outgrown the ability to do it in that approach. This is a way that allows us to efficiently, without exceeding our permit fees, provide adequate resources to make sure we're adequately and professionally inspecting all of these construction projects that are going on in the city, and to do so with a firm that's reputable, and as you can see from the number of cities they work with, works with a lot of cities in the region. It's a economical and smart way for us to move forward, as well as adjusting a really outdated fee schedule. Our fees have been far below all of our neighboring cities around us for a significant period of time. I want to be very clear that this level sets the fees. We're not in excess of anyone else. Simply brings us in line with where construction costs are today. And so that is why we sought this and feel it's a recommended option for us to better suit our construction and inspection and permitting needs.
All right. What I'll do is I'll bring the item to the floor. Members of Council, you have before you a request for Mayor and Council to approve the authorizing the City Administration to execute the Charles Abbott Associates, Inc. agreement for building Building Department Services and to approve the revised building permit fee schedule. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Councilman Heath, second by Ms. Mayor Pro Tem, Hattie Fortis Jones. Are there any questions by any members of council? Go ahead, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes, thank you so much. And for the record, could you state your name? The clerk didn't get your name.
Brian Epstein.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Epstein. A couple questions. The plan review component that you are proposing to add to the residential.
Yes.
Could you just talk a little bit about what that is and why that is important?
So whenever we do a residential plan review, we go through and we assess and evaluate any apparent deficiencies. A lot with the residential is field verified because it does change based on material supply. They may have I-joist certain model specified, and they may have another. So we field verify that, but along with identifying the common problems or occurrences we have, we also verify square footages. We also verify, grades and stuff like that. So that way, whenever we go out and do the inspection, get through the process, there's nothing that jumps up to the customer. Now, I will say on homeowner projects, the review is a little more in-depth because we have a lot of times people taking on projects and not familiar with construction. So we try to advise them as much as we can on the plans as far as certain spans and locations of columns and help work them through the process.
You're advising the construction?
The homeowners.
The homeowners,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of times what we'll do is we'll note the maximum spans on joists they may have, and then if they need to know how to fix that, we'll make recommendations to help them along through the project.
And why is this important, given that we have not done this in the past as a city? So why is this important?
Well, like I said, we try to identify major issues that we have up front on the drawings, as well as verifying the square footages are correct as what's reported on the application, because that's going to affect the permit cost. Occasionally, there are square footages left out. They may have forgotten a basement to add over a slab. So, we verify that information as well.
Okay. That's very helpful, and thank you for that. And then lastly, in terms of operations, will you be housed here in the city of Fairburn? And if so, what's the minimum staffing and what's the classification of the staffing that will be housed here?
Yeah, so we work out of the city hall and as well as remotely. So we'll have a building official here and we'll have inspectors in the field. I am the one that's assigned as the project manager for Fairburn. I'm also serving as the building official, City of South Fulton and Palmetto. So we're currently, right now, we have staff going through Fairburn every day doing inspections, whether it be in Palmetto or in South Fulton, because of the logistics. So, as the volume of inspections increase, we can ramp up our inspectors as needed without a problem.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Davis?
Yes. I have a question for Mr. Epstein and one for Mr. Phillips. Mr. Epstein, could you share any challenges, if any, that your company has had during this current environment that we're in reference to you delivering your services or any challenges that may have faced?
We actually haven't, and with the different city halls and the COVID situations, it has been pretty much seamless for us because we're so accustomed to working remote and we have our folks work remote and work to the city hall. So it really hasn't been an issue, and the cities have responded well as far as the service they've gotten, as well as the contractors.
Okay. Even in reference to the lack of continuity as it relates to supplies coming in and out, that in addition to the expense of materials, building materials and stuff like that, has that had any adverse effect on your business?
We do have some subdivisions where we have projects sitting, waiting on windows. Different times they're having issues with concrete. I had a gentleman call me up last week. He had forgot to schedule an inspection for a slab he needed to pour, and he asked if we could get somebody out because for him to reschedule, it was going to be 2 months. And I said, absolutely, we'll get somebody out there. So we work with different contractors through that process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, there are some things that have to be in place for us to finish and result in an inspection, but we try to work with them the best we can.
Okay. So there hasn't been an adverse effect on the fees that you charge now and everything?
Okay. No, ma'am.
Okay.
No, it's still, we base the construction cost based on valuation table. I will say the past 2 years that table has bumped upward, mm-hmm. as it should have,
mm-hmm.
because those costs have went up, and that's being passed on to the consumer.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Phillips, with this, to me, great impact on our fees, how are we going to market that to make sure everybody is aware of it and it won't be shock?
Sure.
So what plan do we have?
These fees primarily impact companies that are constructing, construction companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to apply for permits. They have to also call for inspections. And at that time, all that information is readily available. They know exactly what the permit fees are. It'll be posted on our website as well. It'll be publicly accessible. But folks in this industry are very well versed in permitting fees and plan application fees. It's kind of part and parcel of what they do every day. We will ensure that it is a click away on the website. It's easy to get to, but it's really kind of the everyday, you know, work that construction companies do. You can't really be in that business and not know permitting fees and plan review fees. It's just a necessary day-to-day part of what they do. So we'll go above and beyond to make sure that it's readily accessible, but we will have it posted on our website. And when they contact our office to begin the process, permitting and applications, all of that information is accessible and available to all of the companies that would be engaging these type of construction fees.
Yeah, but it's almost like we've kind of been taken advantage of
fees. That is an interesting observation. And I did want to add one bit of clarity to the plan review, Mayor Pro Tem, you were asking about earlier. It's not actually new. We've done plan reviews before. We've simply not charged for them. And previously, it appears that we were doing plan review, for instance, if there was a subdivision with two or three model homes. We would review the first model, not all the subsequent homes that were built. So now this changes that, because you should really do plan review on every home that's constructed. We've seen instances where the home that got constructed didn't match the plans in the file. We want to avoid situations like that. And the way you do that is you have to do plan review on any home that's built in Fairburn so that it meets all of the regulatory standards, all of the things that the gentleman spoke about earlier. That should happen on every single construction in the city. And so this puts us in position with these resources and this fee schedule to do that and to get the reasonable, you know, fees that come with that plan review that any other municipality would typically charge.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Whitmore.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. A couple of things. Number one, I see that there's a percentage, and this is directed to you, Mr. Phillips, percentage of revenue sharing based on fees. That would be a 60-40.
Yes, 60% goes to Charles Abbott, 40% comes to the city. As he briefly referenced, that ensures that at no point will the cost of these inspections ever exceed our permitting fees.
Right, okay. Thank you for that clarity. The other thing is, yes, the fee schedule that you currently have here is really going to put us in a better position. Our fees were low, and guess what? All the contractors knew it, but they weren't going to say anything about it.
Certainly.
So it's good that we're addressing this and correcting this, and then also it's not coming out of our
exactly.
our funding for them to do such things. The other thing is the plan reviews. Mm-hmm. There are some communities that have architectural review committees prior to even coming to the city. So that kind of helps out because now that new community has an idea of what's coming, and then when it hits the city is just a verification. Actually, you're the law for the city. So that's a good thing as well. So we appreciate that. My other question, Mr. Phillips, is for the request. I understand that there's going to be someone that's going to be physically here. I'm assuming in the office where Mr. Stokes is at. So that process does not change. And did I also hear that we're going to start something where they can apply online?
We're working towards that as well. But to your first point, yes, you're exactly right. That process does not change. The administrative staff person that was there remains there. And so the person, the face they see when they walk in the door accepting those applications is the same person that's been there for the last several years.
And last question, what is your timetable for us improving our website so we're 21st century ready, where people can actually go online, it automatically hits that department, and now when they come in to pay their fees or whether or not we're going to be collecting it via the website or what have you?
Mr. Whitmore, can I just do a follow-up to Mr. Phillips? As relates to the upgrade in the, as he mentioned, we're looking at the upgrade in the tech, not just in this case, payment bills. Because of a cyber attack that took place literally January the 9th here in our government, we're having to literally prioritize as relates to some of the cybersecurity issues that had to be addressed like yesterday because of information that's been lost as of January, as a matter of fact, happened on January the 9th. So, again, I just want to let you know we are looking at the upgrade in technology, but one, simultaneously, we're having to do first thing first, and that is to make sure that the cybersecurity is in place to deal with everything. So, did you? Sorry, Mr. Whitmore, you had another question.
So, Mr. Epstein?
Yes, sir.
So, once this is, if this is approved tonight, you're on site tomorrow?
Yes. We'll be here.
All right, because I already know I got a phone call already from one business owner that is ready to come in. They didn't know what the process was. I just told them, stand fast, that something is coming. So,
yes, sir.
Good to know. Thank you, sir. That's it for me, Mayor.
Any other questions?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yes, Mr. Phillips. The saying, out of a crisis comes an opportunity. And given that we now have before us the consultants and experts in the field, is part of their agreement to assist us in documenting and making suggestions and recommendations regarding operations, skill sets needed, staffing needed, et cetera, et cetera. Is that part of this agreement, and can we expect that that will take place?
Yes, to answer both questions, you can expect that to take place. One of the reasons we selected Charles Abbott is because of the depth of their experience. You saw the list of municipalities that they're currently working in. They've got a broad base of experience, and a lot of inspectors have done this for a long time. So not only will it make sure that we don't miss a beat, and by the way, our inspections have continued unabated, so we've not missed any inspections, and they've assured us they're staffed up and ready to go in the morning should they have inspections that need to get done. But we will also look at that process, Mayor Pro Tem, to see where we can make internal improvements to our own process. That's one of the added values of bringing in experienced staff to help manage these operational processes is best practice lessons and learning how to more efficiently do this, and we'll look for every opportunity to do that.
Okay, and then who in the city will be working alongside them?
We have a number of staff members that will connect. Initially, Ms. Chris has been the point person to organize this. We had a transition in our buildings department, as you know, and so we're filling in on some interim vacancies. As we move forward with filling that vacancy and making some operational adjustments, it will connect to several staff members. The building official that we will hire shortly will also be key in that process. Existing administrative staff that is in that office now that has been there for several years will also be working with Charles Abbott. And then it indirectly connects to planning and zoning, to some of what Mr. Lester Thompson does. So literally it is a team of folks that will be all collaborating together to make sure that we move forward simultaneously.
Okay, thank you for that. And I will also be looking for, in addition to the high-level position, what will be some of the mid-level to lower-level positions so that we are no longer a one-man shop and that we are not devastated when we lose key personnel.
Very much. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Next item.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is a resolution authorizing establishment of a COVID-19 pandemic leave policy.
Champagne, I'm going to let you do a little brief and then I'll bring it to the floor. Go ahead.
Good evening, Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, members of council. Thank you all so much for allowing me to stand before you tonight. We have before you the COVID leave policy along with the pandemic leave benefit that's part of the policy. There is two parts to this policy being brought before you tonight. One, the policy was developed in a way for us to develop safety protocols and guidelines due to the surge of COVID cases, not only within our county, but a surge of COVID cases within our employee population. In addition to that, we added another component, which was to establish a pandemic leave benefit for our employees in a way to incentivize those employees who are currently vaccinated as a way that they would not have to utilize their own sick time, or those who don't have enough sick time to where if they contracted the virus of no fault of their own, that they will still be able to utilize some type of leave benefit.
Okay. Members of council, you have before your request for mayor and council to approve approval to establish the COVID-19 policy and pandemic leave benefit. Is there a motion?
So moved.
There's a second.
Second.
Second by Ms. Davis. Any questions or comments by council?
I just want to make one comment, Mayor.
Go ahead, Mayor. Pro Tem.
No, COVID-19 is the impetus for this policy, but could you also look, Ms. Champagne, at a broader policy, if you will, that would cover other pandemics or epidemics as they occur?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Last item.
The next item is an introduction to Municipal Electric Authority of Georgia, known as MEAC.
Evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
My name is Stuart Jones. I'm the Senior Regional Manager for the area that Fairburn falls in, as we have it defined as the Northern Region. The first thing that I notice when the slide deck comes in is the date, July 20th. Excuse me. If you were in attendance at the annual meeting, then I apologize for the redundancy. This is the same slide deck that we used there, but it's, you know, the same material and all that, all those sort of things. So if you will, we'll just get started and go on through the slide deck. Okay. I have the, this is dangerous. Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Alrighty. Well, as you know, you all have been supplying, electric service for a long, long time. The slide deck talks about it dating back to the 1890s, and each of the. Okay, what did I do there? It just cleared on me. Okay. Anyway, so multiple, municipal systems, not only across Georgia but across the entire country, started providing. Electric service in the 1890s, 1900s. Most of that early service was for electric trolleys, and that eventually led to street lighting being, provided and all that. As time went on, the systems began to expand, and at least as far as Georgia goes, the transmission system was built out and everything was tied together. And the municipal systems, of which Fairburn happens to be one, ended up being wholesale power customers of Georgia Power. So up until the time that MEAG was actually formed, you all were wholesale customers of Georgia Power Company. Following World War II, the economies of scale continued to grow, prices dropped, and the actual demand went up. Please stop me whenever we're going through here, if we need to. Okay. All right, okay. Jump ahead to the 1970s. Georgia Power was in the midst of, at that point, what was the largest construction program in the history of the state. That's, of course, been superseded now by Vogtle 3 and 4. But this was also in the mid-70s. For those of us that were around and kicking then, the economy was not good. Interest rates were double-digit. Home mortgages were 12, 15, 17%. And Georgia Power had gotten to the point to where they were in such a financial strait they could not borrow any more money to finish what they had started as far as the actual program goes. So they issued notice to their wholesale customers that in the event that the grid is jeopardized to where it'll collapse, we're going to have to curtail load or service to our customers, and we're not going to curtail it to the retail customers. We're going to curtail it to the wholesale customers. So that meant all the municipal systems in the state that were wholesale customers. And by that time, the EMCs were already going, and they were also wholesale customers. So let's see. The second bullet, the Georgia Power was also seeking an operating license for Hatch Unit 2, which is one of the nuclear units outside of Baxley. And Vogtle 1 and 2 were in an antitrust review by the Department of Justice. A little difference in today's environment. Back then, a builder of a nuclear power plant initially had to apply for a construction license. They get it built, they go through all the testing, then they had to apply for an operator's license. Today, that application is joined. So the operation license for Vogtle 3 and 4 has already been given. We just got to continue to get all the testing done, the fuel loaded and all that. That was a big step, actually, getting those two licensing processes combined. So under the antitrust review, which was required by the Department of Justice, Georgia Power agreed to sell, as it says, to the municipals and the co-ops shares in the generating facilities. A little bit later on, they also agreed to sell us interest in the transmission system. Oh, I'm not pulling in the right place. I got it. Okay. This is just a copy of the purpose of the authority that was established when the law was written that established MEAG power. I'm not going to read it to you, but it is codified. All righty, a map of the state. At this point, there are 48 municipal systems that make up MEAG power. The reason we have one county segregated out like that is It's Cripps County Power, and it serves the entire county itself. All the rest of the members are municipal systems. Our looks like the population, that's 634,000. That's a total for all 49 cities, 208 to 74,000. I think the 208 is probably Brinson. 74,000, my guess, is probably Albany as far as that goes. The area of the 49, we have a 2-square-mile service area. I'm sure that's Brinson again. And the 280 square mile area, I have no doubt that is also Cripps County Power. Again, they have that entire county there that not only has Cordele in it, but Araby is the other town that is there. All the assigned territories were designated by the 1973 Territorial Act, which was the law that was developed that allowed for the development of MEAG Power as the umbrella organization for the municipals, and Oglethorpe Power as the umbrella organization for the EMCs. I guess around here it's probably Greystone would be the closest of the EMCs that are in the area. I know from the competitive standpoint, that would be who you all would probably deal with most of the time is either, is Greystone and then Georgia Power, of course. Our mission statement, value statement, vision, to me, enhance the quality of the life in our communities. You know, we are locally governed by you guys. You'll hear the Public Service Commission as far as Georgia Power goes. The elected officials who elect our board are our, if you will, our PSC. You all have input through that board. But to enhance the quality of life in our communities, I think, is our number one goal, certainly. Okay. Why was it important for us to begin? Well, the short answer back there was the survival of the electric cities. Because, as I said earlier, Georgia Power had issued letters to all the wholesale customers, and there was a date certain on it that going forward, if the grid became stressed to the point that it was going to fail, then they were going to curtail all of their wholesale customers. And of course, that drove all the folks that were in the elected official area to try to get together and see what we could do to help finish that. Construction. I think one thing here, some of the quotes from the original board members, reading over them, that you could say that today. Economic development, we all need to have local load growth to continue to grow the load for the needs of our communities, and that's part of what Steve Jackson's group does when they do their load forecast, is to try to mesh up what your all's requirements are with what we have available in the field, and then if we need to add things, we can do that. Let me drop your eye down to former Mayor Ed Pope there in Washington. He talks about 47 of the 50 joining. That was the original number back in 1977. We've now added two more. Covington joined in 86 and Ackworth joined in 02, so it's now 49. That'll be the number you'll see in all the literature today. This is the present board with one small exception. Lower left-hand corner where it says Steve Renfro. Steve has actually stepped away. And at the annual meeting last month, Eric Wilson, the mayor of Forsyth, was elected to fill his actual position. The remaining members that are there are our chairman, is mayor of Marietta, Steve Tumlin, our vice chair, Larry Vickery, general manager in Calhoun, and then our secretary treasurer is Alderman Tim Houston out of Ackworth. The officers are elected for 2-year terms, so this will be the last year for Mayor Tumlin as far as being chairman, and then the vice chair will shift over, secretary treasurer moves over, and then there'll be another one of the members moved up into the secretary treasurer slot. Oops. This is a timeline. I'm not going to hit it because we got other slides we need to get to, other than point out that the city of Oxford joined in 86. I had mentioned that earlier. And then the city of Ackworth came in 02. And that's how we got to the 49 that you see today. If in your review of this later on you have any questions, email, call, or text, I'll be more than happy to spend however much time that we need to satisfy any of your questions. This is a this graphic shows how our billing is done based on the projects that we have in play. You might imagine as time has gone on, we've had to add generation capacity to the fleet. The Project 1 resolution was the very beginning of MEAG back in 1977. You can see there's Scheer 1 and 2, Hatch 1 and 2, Vogel 1 and 2, Wansley 1 and 2, and then transmission. Those units were in that project. There are the percentages that are in those circles are MEAG's numbers, and Fairburn has your appropriate share of those percentages in that project. Time went on. We needed additional capacity. Georgia Power was looking to sell more, so in 1978, Project 2 was financed. That was additional capacity in Wansley 1 and 2, which are the two, which are two coal units, along with Scheer 1 and 2, which are also two coal units. Some more time went on. Project 3 in 1980, that was the last of the capacities that were available in the coal units, and that's Scheer 1 and 2. And then back in 1983, we finished the available capacity at Vogel 1 and 2, and that's in Project 4. And you would see all this designation with a budget review or with a billing review. So these numbers are in front of your all staff on a monthly basis. Last but not least, the orange circle, the combined cycle gas project, which is located on the Wansley campus. You all are a participant in that. It was commissioned in 04, and it is a really good resource. Natural gas, obviously, is one of the, as far as fossil fuel goes, is certainly a whole lot cleaner than our coal, so it's very much in the fleet. Last but not least, Vogel 3 and 4, 2007 was when it was financed, and the three projects that are listed in the circles to the right of the larger one is the SPVs that I mentioned the last time. We referred to it as project over the years, but as far as the legal calling goes, it's special purpose vehicles. M being that capacity that's available to the participants. You all are part of it when the units come online. J and P is the 20-year offset that Jacksonville Electric and Power South will use for the first 20 years. You all are also a part of that of those projects. This is a location on the state of the generating facilities. Plant Wansley burns Eastern Coal. It's actually south of Carrollton, about 20 miles or so. And it's also the same location as the natural gas plant that you all have. Yes, sir.
I know in the meeting they talked about the coal supply in the U.S. is 5 years away from being depleted. So what do they propose to do with these plants, turn them over to gas or what, the ones that's coal?
Well, the Plant Wansley site actually is will be non-operational the end of this month.
Oh, really?
All right. So those two units that are there will no longer be in the fleet. There is still some existing debt that'll have to be paid off, but that decision was made based on the need to add additional environmental controls. This Eastern Coal is a higher sulfur coal out of central Illinois. The co-owners, along with consultants, decided that that extra expense was just too much, all candor. So the decision has been made to shut that down. Let me jump down to Plant Scheer, the Western Coal. That is located north of Macon and east of Forsyth, which is the closest MEAG city. And you may have read in the news where Georgia Power and the two Florida utilities they've already announced they're closing Unit 3 and 4 at Scheer. We are not, on your all's behalf, in 3 or 4 at all. We're in Units 1 and 2. At this point, the co-owners of Units 1 and 2, which are us, Georgia Power, Oglethorpe for the co-ops, and the City of Dalton, we're beginning to evaluate, do we want to keep Scheer going? We'll have to make a decision by 2025, and at that point, all the numbers will be shared. you all will be brought in for that, you know, review. So there is the possibility that Shearer would be shut down, and if that were to be the decision by the co-owners, then that date would be 2028 to coincide with the other two. Well, let me back up on that. I know Georgia Power said they're going to close Unit 3 in 2028. I think Unit 4 is already shuttered. Okay. It was controlled by two Florida utilities.
Are there plans to maybe revitalize those plants at a later date, run natural gas or something along those lines?
Anyway, let me defer that to Steve. This is that type of detail is what his group looks at.
Thank you.
Now, I can say we're operating under the latest integrated resource plan, which was 2020. We're getting ready to do another one just because of the changes that are starting to make, and the decisions will have to be evaluated and made as to what we'll be doing to help replace those resources as they go away. But I'll let Steve talk about that.
Thank you. Steve Jackson, Chief Operating Officer for MEAG Power. When you look at shuttering a coal plant, you know, we will demolish, for example, at Wannsee 1 and 2, those units will be demolished. Those sites would be a good location for other generating resources because you have transmission infrastructure there, you have other infrastructure that can be put to use. You don't have any definitive plans at this point for those sites, but we absolutely will look at opportunities to reuse those sites because of that available infrastructure. Those make a lot of sense.
One last question. Is the generating power we're going to get from 3 and 4 going to be able to handle the load from these plants y'all proposing to shut down?
Yes, when you look at the key thing about the plant Wansley units, 270 megawatts of capability, but the units did not run often, so we didn't get a lot of energy from those. So when we look at the nuclear resources, for Project M, it's about 170 megawatts, not as much capability, but they'll be running around the clock. So we'll have energy, actually more energy than we would have gotten out of the coal units.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Let's see. Plant Vogtle and Plant Hatch, there are the two nuclear facilities. Hatch is located outside of Baxley, Georgia. I guess maybe the closest MEAG city would be Douglas or Fitzgerald. But Vogtle, of course, I know you've seen that. That's the one that's in the news. It's in Waynesboro, about 30 miles southeast of Augusta. Units 1 and 2 have been operating since the early 80s. Units 3 and 4 are currently under construction. The projected in-service date for Unit 3 is first quarter of next year, and the projected in-service date for Unit 4 is fourth quarter of next year. And we're all excited about those little babies starting to put out kilowatt hours. Last but not least is Hydro. You all are part of the Southeastern Power Administration. We wheel it, but you all have a separate contract with them and separate billing and all that. The combination of the nuclear and the hydro is your non-emitting resources. And in plain English, there's no smoke being belched out of those units because they don't have, you know, they don't have smokestacks. They don't burn coal. They're non-fossil fuels. So those are your clean resources. This slide shows, I'll say, the demarcation between MEAG Power's responsibility and each of the participants. We're responsible for the generation facilities over the transmission system into the what we refer to as the low side of the distribution substations. And by low side, we're referencing the voltage levels that are there at the substation or at the generation facilities. We're looking at 230,000 volts to 550,000 volts. That voltage gets stepped down at point number two into the transmission substations to about 115,000 volts. And then that gets sent along the wires to your all's facilities to where your substations will take that 115,000 volts and step it down to about 12,000. And then the right side of that red dotted line, then your John and your all's folks actually distribute that power to the customers, and that 12,000 volts is stepped down to whatever secondary level that a house is 122.40. You've got commercial customers that are 122.08, 482-77, whatever the need is, John's folks take care of that final transformation. Yes, sir.
Is there any plans to build any more generating plants after 3 and 4 are done global?
In the IRP, we will address that. Actually, I guess at this point, didn't mean to hit that. We're still looking at a solar project.
Okay.
That's in this 2020 IRP. Councilmember Davis mentioned supply chain issues. That's impacted the solar project, but at this point, it's an 80 megawatt facility that was projected to come on in January of 2024. I don't know if that's are we still looking at that? Okay, so it's been moved out about six months, but. Yeah, yes, I guess to answer your question a little more specifically, Steve's group looks at just exactly what you're talking about every year. We're getting ready to issue the information to the participants for next summer's reserves. I'm going to fill John's inbox tomorrow with supplemental needs, and I'll be reaching out to him, and we'll get together and talk about your all's needs. And those reviews can, as they trickle back up, can have an impact of requiring not only larger transformers on your all system, but our system transmission lines right to the generator bus. Okay, this next slide, it shows the wording here is emission free. That center blue box is MEAG power specific for 2021. And the emission-free numbers is a combination of the 59% nuclear and the 7% hydro. You compare that to Georgia Power on the left, or the U.S. Generation on the right, and you can see that as far as the system goes, we're significantly more green, if you will, than the other companies are. And once Vogtle 3 and 4 comes online, that will increase as well. So that's very attractive to a lot of the customers that come in, I know, and look at the MEAG cities is this fuel mix. Now, your all's mix would be somewhat, because of your particular mix, your all's numbers might be a little different. I will provide those to John to where you can look at them, but that 66% number is the system number. Your all's might be a little higher. It could be a little lower depending on your all's ultimate mix. Okay, let's see, where are we? The Vision 2045, all right. That was a result of the 2020 IRP. Let me just direct your attention to the very last bold item there where it talks about adding resources to the mix to where the emissions-free energy deliverable by 2045 is roughly 90%. And that's because of the addition of Vogtle 3 and 4 and other I'll say non-greenhouse gas units. It's still in the offing, and the evaluation still needs to be done. But we're looking to add as much non-emitting to the fleet as we can. The IRP, okay. We had mentioned Plant Wansley; those two units going away at the end of this month. That's what number one is actually referencing. Number two, I mentioned the solar project that we have in play. And as Steve mentioned, that's been moved out to about mid-2024. Our existing nuclear fleet, they're coming up for relicensing. You can see Hatch Unit 1 in 2034, Hatch Unit 2 in 2035. The NRC has already relicensed similar type units across the country, so we expect that to happen. And at that point, that will be in another 20 years on to the operating license for those nuclear facilities, which just continues to give you access to that, to the greenhouse gas-free energy and power. Same thing with Vogtle units. This talks about Vogtle Unit 3 and 4. We're hoping to have those online sometime next year. If you were curious, Vogtle 1 and 2, their relicensing doesn't come up until the mid-2040s. But again, the precedent's been set. We fully expect them to get another 20 years. This is the timeline from the IRP, and you can see out through on the bottom there what the resources are that's in the IRP, the solar PPA, obviously Vogtle Units 3, the reduction of coal as we continue on. I know at this point Wansley is that pointed reduction number. Get further on out, add solar, reduce our gas requirements. And to add the nuclear at the very end, just in case you all are wondering, that's really a recognition of the end of the 20-year contract with JEA and Power South, and that capacity, which there's 206 megawatts in J and 125 megawatts in P, so that 300-plus megawatts of capacity will be on the system in 2043. The integrated transmission system. Remind you of the slide, that's the Project 1 designation where the ITS is actually billed. 17,000 miles of line across the state. We own a little over 1,300. You all have, technically speaking, you have access to every inch of that line, all the substations that, you know, connect. And under the customer choice provision of the Territorial Act, you could bid on, you know, customers that have any connection to this 17,000 miles of line. Now, you know, from a practical standpoint, if you all were to win a customer down in Pooler, that might take you a while to get there when the voltage sags. So there is some, physical constraints on really how far that you might want to bid, because if you win the bid, you are responsible for the customer power good, power bad, storms hit, billing issues, all that sort of stuff, you know. So the only reason that I mentioned Pooler is I know Kia's just announced a big battery plant there, and we've already had some calls at the office about reaching out to it, and it's the closest MEAG city to Pooler I get right now, I guess, would be Sylvania, and that's still a hike. So there is some limits there to that. Benefits of public power, local control, local employment, all the decisions are made right within all of the governing bodies through the board that we have, and you all, of course, vote on the board members every year. That's at the annual meeting. And I would encourage you all to certainly participate. Not only come to the annual meeting, but certainly, you know, participate in getting to know other folks that are in this business. The community of MEAG Power, it's great. The folks are in this business for the right reasons, and it's for the people that we serve. One last thing. If you come to the annual meeting, take advantage of the Energy Authority tour on Monday afternoon, which is where we do the wholesale buying and selling. When you guys are long on an hour or you're short on an hour, it's really a great, great tour. A little more words from the corporate sponsor. We are among the lowest as far as the wholesale goes. Strong credit rating, conservative balance sheet. We have a great credit rating, only because you all do. So I want to make sure that nobody misses that. MEAG is the only participant in Vogtle 3 and 4 whose credit rating has not dipped since the construction started. And that speaks highly to your all's balance sheet. Okay. A little more. Some of the things. Paul Warfel's group works on the appropriate legislation and regulations. There's always something going on in D.C. about the Clean Power Plan, about the EPA. You never rest thinking that somebody's going to stop. You know, just because we voted to close Wansley down, that doesn't mean they're not going to start looking at Shearer. The work and educational trade, the APPA, that's the umbrella organization nationally for the more than 2,000 public power systems across the country. Steve Renfro just stepped away from being on that board, and when we've had representation on the board of APPA, I know ever since Bob Johnson was our CEO, and I'm sure we will continue to have that. Large Public Power Council is a subset of APPA of the generators. We have a very active group. Steve, I know, is one of the folks that stays involved with that. And I know what time it is. Last but not least, the Georgia Mayor's Council for Public Power. That's the group of mayors that get together and sponsor the Mayor's Summit we have every fall, to where Paul Wharf on his group gets you all together and we talk about what we anticipate occurring in Atlanta and the next legislative session, and then also Washington. It's a great day, at a two and a half days, I guess, total. A lot of information is packed into those 2 days. This year's is at Chateau Alon, November 4th, 5th, and 6th. Don't quote me on that date. I'll have to confirm it. But I would encourage all and everybody to come. It is well spent. Let me just cruise on past here. These communications, Under the Domes is what Paul Warfel puts out and his group when the legislation is in session. It details what we're watching on y'all's behalf. Of course, it's all electric, which you wouldn't be no really big surprise. If you're not getting that, let me know. I can add you to our list. The other two things to the right, quarterly we have a current that highlights communities. This one happens to be Lafayette. But that's online now. I was getting ready to say, if you didn't get that hard copy, let me know. But it's now, you know, online. We have a new website. It'd be great for you to get out there and look and see. There's all kinds of information about the 49 communities and MEAG Power. It is just chock full of stuff. That's me and the 17 cities that I work with. My contact stuff there, call, email, or text. I use all, you know, mediums there. Holly Bissig, my counterpart for the central part of the state. We back up each other. If you can't reach me, reach out to Holly. And on the southern side, there's Matthew Chansey for the southern side of things. Again, we back up each other, and they're more than happy if something happens where you can't reach me and you need something quick, just reach out to either one of them. They are top notch. That's it.
Okay. Being that there's nothing, we don't have a vote on anything. Any members of council has any questions before he departs?
Yes, Mayor, I do.
Yes, Mayor.
I actually have a long list of questions, but I won't ask them tonight. But I just want to say I appreciate this level of detail about who MEAG is and who we are as a city as part of MEAG. And I in particular appreciate a couple of the graphs that you provided or pictures that you provided that talked about MEAG's responsibility in delivering electricity, and then the city's responsibility in doing that. I think that's a very, very powerful pictorial of that relationship. And so broadly, though, you talked about the integrated plan. Can you just talk a little bit about what's in the integrated plan relative to MEAG City's becoming more green, or what is it that MEAG is doing on our behalf for that, and what is MEAG encouraging us to do in that regard?
Okay. That question is part and parcel to Steve's expertise, so let me defer to him on that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much for that question. As we look at the future, is what the Integrated Resource Plan did. We look out 25 years, and we try to determine what new resources may be needed for the system as other units go out of service. We have some units that are under contract, expire in 2029. And what we see primarily beyond the Vogtle addition is adding solar resources to the system. There in the ag cities have a lot of baseload generation, which is around-the-clock generation with the nuclear resources. And so as time goes on, adding additional solar resources to the system looks like, at this point, that it will reduce costs. Now, those will be, you know, don't need them currently, or many of the participants don't need them, but so they'll be added incrementally over time. And so if you have an interest in, you know, solar resources, Stuart can help you with that. We do have the one project underway, and we are looking at when should we do our next project. So we do see a lot of additional solar resources being added to the system. At some point, you know, if you look at having to take the gas resources out of service, then, you know, you would have to add a much more, a larger amount of those. So it's a balancing act. We don't want you to have to pay too much for resources, but we do believe over time, as Stuart showed in his graph, that we will add additional non-emitting resources on your behalf to the system, primarily for Georgia, likely solar resources.
So do you also assist us with the how-tos if we were interested in doing that? Would you be able to assist the city in doing that?
Yes, that's that is our role. If you have an interest in a certain type of resource or you have a need from one of your potential customers that they want to have more green energy, that's our role to help you acquire that. And there's different ways we can do that, either acquiring a contract resource or buying some of that power from someone else. So we have different options, and we're available to assist you with that and whatever your goals may be for your community.
Okay. And then the other graph, and you can answer this question as well, where it was shown how MEAG as a whole, how we compare versus Georgia and the U.S., in terms of green energy. And Robert, you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that that this picture depicts the system as a whole, but that individual cities may be positive or negative of those, right? And so I would be interested in knowing where Fairburn is relative to that. And I would also be interested in some parallel suggestions to Fairburn about how we may increase our green energy, doing the same thing you're doing if we can, or suggestions or opportunities where we may do other things. And then lastly, are there programs, grant opportunities, if you will, for through MEAG to help a city if they want to endeavor into trying to be more green in regard or working with a commercial customer who is interested in doing that?
So just to, directly to answer your question about your percent non-emitting in 2020, you had your supply was 62% non-emitting. 56% of your supply was from your nuclear resources, 6% from your hydropower resources. The balance of that, your resources from natural gas at 36% and a small amount of coal in 2020, 2%. In 2021, that changed slightly. Your non-emitting resources were 60% of your supply, 55% nuclear, 5% from your hydro facilities. In 2021, you had 9% generation from coal and 31% from gas. So you have a slight change between the 2 years, depending on the economics of coal and gas and the operation of the nuclear generation fleet. When you ask about grants, we are engaged trying to put in place for the participants, a consultant to help look at potential grant opportunities in the Infrastructure Act that was passed. And I know Electric Cities of Georgia, ECG, is also, many of that would be associated with our part of the business. And I know ECG, or Electric Cities of Georgia, is looking at grant opportunities as well. It may be more associated with the retail level of the business. So Stuart can follow up with them on those opportunities. We're not to the point of being able to identify those yet because the bill processes and requirements are being written still. We are looking at being proactive to identify grant opportunities a lot of it around reliability and resiliency and green. So as we move further into that process, we'll have more information to share.
Okay, and I also hope that I know the the federal dollars will be the catalyst in order to get this, but I would hope that MEAG is also having a discussion about how they can continue once those federal dollars are no longer there.
Absolutely.
Right. Thank you both so much.
Mr. Heath and then Mr. Whitmore.
Yes, sir. Do you anticipate once Vogtle 3 and 4 go online that there will be like a rate increase in the cost of power to us?
Yes, there will likely be. I know we provide projections, 10-year projections, so you can understand what those impacts are. But we would expect, because of the fixed cost nature of those resources, that there would be some incremental cost. I mean, I don't know that level, but we can Stuart can provide that those projections for your information.
The reason that I ask that is that there's a lot of senior people living in our city, and the cost of, you know, a few percent even, we get a lot of complaints about that, so I just needed to have something I could relate to them about.
And just one comment I'll make in relation to that, one of the benefits that MEAG Power, for on behalf of the city of Fairburn, has been able to achieve is much of your current generation is reached the limit, the time where the original debt has been paid on that. So what you have is an offsetting reduction in cost that helps to lower the pain, for lack of a better word, to minimize that increase as the new cost ends. So the timing of that is very beneficial.
Right.
So by that debt payments going down, you're adding some other debt in, it helps minimize that impact.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Whitmore.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I noticed you talked about the MEAG solar system project. I'm going to dive a little bit deeper and ask, what is MEAG's policy for customers that wants to put up solar at their residence? And the reason why I ask that question is there is a customer here in Fairburn that wanted to install solar, but all the information that came back, they would be paying more out than even putting the system in because of the surcharges that were going to be charged. And I look at that as a way of discouraging a customer putting solar up. So I'm kind of curious to find out what your policy and what your stance is in reference to that.
Well, and I don't want to appear that I'm passing the buck here, but you know, we operate at the transmission and generation level. When we look at solar resources, we're looking at large utility scale resources like the 80 megawatt project that we're working on behalf of 27 of the participants. When you look at a residential installation of solar facilities, that really is, those policies are set by you as the retail provider. So if, you know, depending on what your policies are as far as, you know, them adding solar resources behind their meter, that's really managed at the city level. Mm-hmm. There are certain state requirements that the city falls under as far as what amount of solar energy they're required to take and other provisions of that, but that really is managed at the local level as opposed to at the MEAG level.
Thank you for that response, Mr. City Administrator. I'd like to have a discussion in reference to that in the very near future. Thank you, Mayor.
Hey, Ms. Whitmore, can I comment to you about that solar thing? Actually, a comment, a conversation I was going to have as it relates to, I guess in this case, our utility. This is much problematic issues with solar as it is about talking. Many people talk about the benefit, and I apologize. I wish I could remember where I saw that recently, where they read about the massive problems that a lot of the cities that went solar, I'm talking about for residential property, is not, I'm not convinced right now that is a problem solver. As a matter of fact, I think it's more problematic, it's my personal opinion, to some of the research from previous years. But I think we'll have that conversation. We'll end up having more conversation about this later, because when it was so much about, when I heard you mention about solar, I was going to be very candid. My position: why in the world would you take on that problem? That's just my personal opinion. But
yeah, and I will add, you know, there are ways to take your share of a large facility like we're talking about building, and provide that benefit to your customers. So there's ways that we can work with you on that, because these larger facilities should be more economic than a small facility that a homeowner would put in. Right. There's ways to work with your commercial customers and others on that. We have
And I apologize, members of council, let me make sure that we got a P&Z meeting here tonight, right? Okay, starts at 7. Okay, I just want to make sure we're aware of that. I apologize as a result of sales, two people sitting there. But I'm sorry, any other members of council got questions?
Just comment, man.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, as you know, I am one that is very proactive with green energy.
Yes, I do know.
Not only do I drive an electric car, but I also have solar at my house.
Right.
And it has been a big benefit for me, in particular because I studied it before moving down here in 2010. And the customer knows that I have it, so then they came to me and approached me about it. And, of course, this is where the dialogue started. But it is a benefit for a customer if they can afford to put in solar, because it's going to reduce your electrical outlay significantly. And I'll use my analogy. People in my community with the size house that I have, they're paying anywhere from $400 to $600 a month. And I only have a 6.4 kilowatt system, and I'm only paying like $125 a month. Now, of course, I know that I can add additional panels on and take me to 10 kW, which will be the max for residential, where I'm not going to be paying anything. So I'm looking at putting more panels on. So there's going to be customers that we have here in the city that's going to look at that benefit, because as we all well know, there's been plenty of complaints about the high rates, and right now we're looking at our rates that could possibly go up. So people are looking for an avenue to reduce that outlay versus to add on to it.
Okay. Any other comments by council? If not, and again, because we're a special call meeting, I don't normally go through members of council's comments. But I wanted Mr. Whitmore, I think that's an issue, that's a celebration or something tomorrow night. I want to make sure you mention.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. members of council, as we know, we all know we did lose a dealer officer here in the city of Fairburn. One of our business owners, the Studio Cigar Lounge, contacted me yesterday. I just happened to be in the city manager's office, and we immediately put them in contact with PD. Deputy Chief Bazitlo, and they will be honoring the life of our dear fallen officer on tomorrow. The doors will open at 6 o'clock, and they are offering for the officers to come in and dine at the studio, as well as mayor and council. And I'm not sure if they're going to have anybody to speak or anything, Mayor, but they did ask me if you would attend. And I said I would pass that information off. So the invitation is there for mayor and council and staff to come out and celebrate the life of our officer.
Okay. With that being said, members of council, if you will, before as we're departing, I want to just confirm how many members of council is actually going to go Thursday. We can talk about that after, as soon as I adjourn. Can I entertain a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mayor Pro Tem, second by Mr. Heath. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries.